The headlines: Iran's president says Donald Trump's political career is over today, while bipolarity of the U.S. society and Washington's isolation are what he has left behind. Security remains tight in Washington, D.C., hours before the inauguration of Joe Biden as the 46th president of the United States. Donald Trump pardons 73 people, including his former aide Steve Bannon and other allies, in his last day in office. Hello and welcome, everybody, here in the Iranian capital, Tehran. This is World News. Our top story for this half-hour: the Iranian president says U.S. President Donald Trump's dark and vicious rule has come to an end, leaving behind a legacy of political isolation for Washington.
One of the results of Trump's amateurish and tyrannical actions was the bipolarity of the U.S. society. Political isolation of the United States was another legacy of Trump. The U.S. was left alone in its policies. It was left alone when acting against Palestine, because the majority of world countries opposed the U.S. America was also left alone regarding the Iran nuclear deal.
Rouhani added the U.S. under Trump was isolated on other occasions, too. He said the U.S. failed to rally the U.N. Security Council support against the Iran nuclear deal and failed to reinstate an arms embargo against Tehran. President Rouhani said Trump's multiple failures at the United Nations was a disgrace for the U.S. The Iranian president says his country expects the new U.S. administration to make up for the mistakes of Trump's government.
Today, we expect those who take power at the White House to return to law. We expect them to deliver on their commitments and try, if they can, to remove all the dark stains left on the U.S. in the past 4 years, because some of those dark blots cannot be removed. The new U.S. administration will shoulder a heavy responsibility.
President Rouhani said the new U.S. administration should also begin abiding by international law and resolutions. He said if they act in good faith and show their honesty not only in word but in deed, Iran will fully comply with its commitments too. Rouhani said the whole world realized that the so-called U.S. maximum pressure campaign against Iran and its economic terrorism failed. Well, to further elaborate on recent comments made by the Iranian president, we're now joined by writer and political commentator Mr. James Tweedy, who's joining us from Plymouth. Also, we have journalist and commentator Mr. Mostafa Khoshchashm, who's joining us from the Iranian capital, Tehran. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. Let's start off with Mr. Tweedy in Plymouth. Sir, give us your initial thoughts on the recent comments coming from the Iranian president, Hassan Rouhani.
Thank you. Well, I'm going to play devil's advocate here a bit. It sounds like President Rouhani is trying to ingratiate himself with the new Biden administration, but that administration, Biden was Vice President Barack Obama, of course, and the Obama administration didn't really negotiate in good faith with Iran back in 2015 in the run-up to the JCPOA agreement, the nuclear deal, so-called nuclear deal. Many of the things that Rouhani says about the Trump administration, I mean, one wonders why he thinks they're a bad, he says like they're a bad thing. I mean, why is it a bad thing that the U.S., for Iran at least, that the U.S. is isolated in the world? Why is it a bad thing that Trump failed to get Britain, France, and Germany to follow him in leaving the JCPOA deal, you see? The Obama administration obstructed the JCPOA deal until the point where Iran was invited into the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, and there was a real prospect that Russia and China would simply import oil directly from Iran and bypass the sanctions. They had other motives for signing that deal, which was to do with driving down the oil price in the world and waging economic war on Venezuela, for instance. So I wouldn't expect anything very good from this administration, from this new administration for Iran. I think, it's fine for Mr. Rouhani to be diplomatic, but I wouldn't hold out many hopes. Joe Biden has already said that he wants Iran to comply with the JCPOA before the U.S. returns to the negotiations. So he's making all his demands before the negotiations begin. Let's say he wants them all met before the negotiations begin. That's a very typical thing from the US. Now, I wouldn't expect anyone in Iran to have a good opinion of Donald Trump after he withdrew from the deal and after he ordered the assassination of General Soleimani. But it has to be said that he may be the lesser of two evils here, because Trump is the first president, I believe, since Herbert Hoover 88 years ago, not to get sent US troops into a major foreign war, and one should count one's blessings. I am not optimistic that the Biden administration would be, would forbear from military action to the extent that the Trump administration has.
Mr. Tweedy, I'm going to stay with you for one more question. Internationally, the Trump administration's performance definitely speaks for itself. But what about internally? As the Iranian president also stated in his recent comments, the Trump administration, Donald Trump, is basically leaving American society as divided as it has ever been in recent memory.
Well, okay, fine. I mean, America is very polarized politically between two parties whose politics are almost identical, really. And that's a trend that's been increasing over the years, and one can't strictly blame Donald Trump for that. If he has polarized things, and it's perhaps because he tried to break with certain policies which, are, for instance, the policy of globalization, economic globalization, which were unpopular with the people. So, and you can see that his support, his actual vote in the last election, although, Joe Biden is going to become president now, his Trump support actually increased, he got more votes. There are problems within the United States. There are internal contradictions. You cannot put them all down to one man. And probably Trump's election is, let's say, a symptom of those contradictions and not the cause.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Tweedy. Let's bring in our guest in Tehran, Mustafa Khoshchesh. Mr. Khoshchesh, let's talk about some of the comments made by the Iranian president. He spoke of how the United States has been isolated, not just only on the issue of Iran, but a number of other occasions as well. Can you elaborate on those comments for us?
Well, I do agree with President Rouhani that the United States maximum pressure policy failed because Donald Trump overemphasized and spoiled the United States' old-fashioned containment strategy that started under Obama in action, actually, that it works through sanctions as well as posing credible military threat. And in both cases, Donald Trump spoiled these two, as we witnessed last year in triple incidents when Tehran shut down the U.S. global hawk, and there was no a reciprocal action by Donald Trump after so much hue and cry. And then when Iranians took the British ship, they were forced to release the Iranian ship, and the Iranian ship unloaded its cargo for Syria or Lebanon, whatever. And then after a month, Iran released the British ship, and we just saw Iranians' victory, crushing victory, in the tit-for-tat policy. And also, the masterpiece was when the Iranian missiles rained down on Ain al-Assad, and there was no response, despite the very fact that Donald Trump had warned that he would bomb 52 sites in Iran, and he took no action, all to display and to unveil and expose that the U.S. Military threats are not credible. And this, jeopardized the United States containment strategy that has been the only strategy that could work somehow and push Tehran to talks, at least with regard to its nuclear program. But now the sanctions also have been crippled, not crippling the Iranian society. They failed, actually, to cripple the Iranian economy. There is a maximum pressure efficiency period, according to Richard Nephew, the architect of the sanctions, as well as President Obama. This is no more than 1.5 years to 2 years. If in 2 years they fail to produce the result, and the result is not collapse of the target country, in this case Iran, but pushing Tehran to the talks through forcing Tehran to change its calculations because of high costs. If they fail to obtain this objective, then it is a failed policy. And in this case, in May, last May, we saw that the two-year-long efficiency period of the sanctions ended, and they failed to push Tehran to the talks to make Tehran surrender to the United States, actually. So this containment strategy, with its two main pillars of military threat and sanctions, it has already been crippled. It has already failed to push Tehran towards talks. But we do know one very fact, clearly, this is the only case that seems to be the future scenario of Biden. The United States is very loyal and very adamant and very insistent on continuing its containment strategy. In the last two decades, whenever there has been a deal between Iran and the United States or Iran and the European countries, Iranians have always been willing for a conflict resolution approach, and they have practiced a conflict resolution approach. That's why Iran has been loyal to the nuclear deal undertakings, actually, after the U.S. withdrew from the deal. But from the American side, it has never been a conflict resolution approach, despite the very fact that they have been showing off, pretending that they are looking for a conflict resolution approach, but they have never been after one. They have been trying to contain Iran. This is very important. And Biden seems to be moving along the same road, given the manifesto that he has released on CNN with regard to containing Iran's missile program, regional program, nuclear program and power. It seems to be the very same case that was put into action by President Obama and was continued by President Donald Trump. He's looking for the same containment strategy. Unless the United States shifts its strategy and drops its containment strategy and replaces it with a conflict resolution approach, then the United States would go along playing the same rules of the game with sanctions and threats, and Tehran would show resistance. But this time, there is a major difference. They have already failed. The two pillars of this game, the sanctions and the threat, they have been crippled. They have failed in achieving any success. And now Tehran knows how to play this game. This is very important. Point two, the United States is suffering from divisions, rifts, and very severe confrontation between two groups of this nation. Now, they are weaker than ever, and we do know that foreign policy starts at home. When they have such big problems at home, they are weak in practicing their hegemony and their will abroad. So, if to be honest with you, I would like to see Biden shift his strategy completely and replace his, containment strategy towards Iran and Paul Wolfowitz doctrine with a very good conflict resolution approach. But to be honest with you, he's not going to do that. He would continue the same containment strategy as his manifesto on CNN and Antony Blinken and Jake Sullivan and others have stressed. So we would see more or less of the same situation with less hue and cry on the side of the United States, more coalition making with the Arab, some Saudi Arabia, Israel, and the NATO and European allies right. By the United States. But Tehran would not shift. Tehran would continue the same approach. No matter it's Biden or Trump, Tehran would not surrender, as its leader and president have both stressed.
All right, thanks a lot, gentlemen. That was journalist and commentator Mostafa Hoshesh joining us from Tehran. Also, thanks to our guest in Plymouth, Mr. James Tweedy. With that, we bring this segment of the program to an end, but we're going to continue with the news for now. The EU foreign policy chief has urged the U.S. to return to the 2015 Iran nuclear deal and stop its policy of sanctions against Tehran.
There is a deal, and the deal had a nuclear side and an economic side. The Iranians are ready to go back to the full commitment, fulfillment of their commitments, if we, the other part of the deal, the Western world, fulfills also our commitments. And for that, we need the Americans to go back to the agreement, or at least to stop threatening with sanctions to everybody who participates in the economic relationship with Iran.
Borrell, in his letter to EU foreign ministers, said the Iran nuclear deal is at a critical juncture. The United States withdrew from the accord in 2018 and reimposed sanctions against Iran. A year later, Tehran began reducing its commitments. It said the measure was in response to the failure of the remaining signatories to make up for Washington's pullout. Iran says the measures are reversible if its economic interests are safeguarded as enshrined in the nuclear deal. Security remains tight in the U.S. Capitol hours before the inauguration ceremony of President-elect Joe Biden. Thousands of National Guard troops and Secret Service officers are now on duty in Washington, D.C. Most public areas have been shut down. Security checkpoints have been set up across the city. The mayor of D.C. earlier called on residents to stay out of the city during the inauguration. Other state capitals are also on high alert. Much of Biden's swearing-in ceremony is scheduled to be held virtually due to the pandemic. But security was tightened in the wake of the January 6th storming of Congress by supporters of outgoing President Donald Trump. The FBI has warned of possible armed demonstrations during Biden's inauguration. U.S. President Donald Trump has granted clemency to his former senior advisor Steve Bannon just hours before his term ends. Bannon had faced charges of defrauding donors to raise funds for a wall built at the Mexico border to stop migrants from coming to the U.S. He's among 143 people the outgoing U.S. president pardoned during his final hours in office. They range from rappers to lobbyists. Trump has been advised not to pardon himself, his family members, and his lawyer Rudy Giuliani. A few weeks ago, Trump pardoned dozens of other people, including his first national security advisor, Michael Flynn. Those people also included four guards jailed for killing Iraqi civilians in 2007. The pardoning of them caused controversy. Outgoing U.S. President Donald Trump has defended his administration's handling of the coronavirus in the country. That's the world's hardest hit nation by the pandemic.
When our nation was hit with the terrible pandemic, we produced not one, but two vaccines with record-breaking speed, and more will quickly follow. They said it couldn't be done, but we did it. They called it a medical miracle, and that's what they're calling it right now, a medical miracle. Another administration would have taken 3, 4, 5, maybe even up to 10 years to develop a vaccine. We did it in 9 months.
In his farewell speech, Trump did not refer to the death toll of more than 400,000 from the pandemic, but he said he grieves for every life lost. Without mentioning incoming President Joe Biden, Trump said he wants luck for the next administration. The outgoing leader condemned the storming of the U.S. Capitol by his supporters earlier this month when lawmakers were certifying Biden's win. Trump called for unity around shared values. He also boasted about his performance regarding the most controversial issues, including immigration. And that brings us to an end here on this edition of the World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Inside Israel.
An Israeli court just ruled that any Arabic language school or funding transport for Arab school children in the northern city of Carmiel is banned. The court says that anything otherwise would alter the city's demographic balance and damage its character.
Until the years 2000, maybe even less, we had students who took the final exams in Arabic. No more ever since. Students lack the motivation. For them, the Arabic language, as I see that, is related to the Arab itself. We don't like the Arab, we don't need the Arab, and we don't want the Arab. So why do we need his language? It's totally equivalent, unfortunately.
In its decision, the court cited so-called nation-state basic law. This law was passed in 2018 and caused public uproar against it, inside Israel and outside Israel, for its apartheid nature. This move is not unprecedented, but shows Israel's racist policies on the indigenous people of the land. An Israeli court has ruled that the northern city of Carmiel is a Jewish city and that Arabic language schools or funding transport for Arab school children are liable to alter the city's demographic balance and damage its character. Thus, it has blocked access to schools for Arab children in the northern city of Carmiel. The court implied that facilitating this access would incentivize Palestinian Arab citizens of Israel to move into the city, thus damaging its Jewish character. This is also true for funding the transportation of Palestinian Arab children living in the city to schools and surrounding communities. The ruling came after a lawsuit which charged that the city of Carmiel was violating its obligation to provide transportation for Arab Israeli children to local schools was dismissed out of hand. In the case, the plaintiffs sued the Carmiel municipality for 25,000 shekels, approximately $7,500, for transportation expenses for two Arab siblings, a brother and sister, who were forced to travel to a school in a nearby town because there are no Arabic language schools located in the city. For years, families and activists have demanded that the Carmiel municipality fund school transportation for Israeli Arab children and has appealed to the Israeli Education Ministry to widen the map of neighboring communities associated with Carmiel school transportation program, but obviously to no avail.
The judge ruled, actually, ruling is not surprising because the goal of establishing Jewish towns in the midst of Galilee is actually to Judaize the Galilee and prevent a majority of Arabs living there. So they don't want the Arabs to feel comfortable in the mixed towns. Okay, if they want to, you know, just go and live. Pay, you know, property taxes and stuff, but they don't want them to establish, you know, Arabic symbols. Like, the language is one big symbol. So they refer to the national law, national bill, that was put in state in 2018, which you know clearly states that the state of Israel is for the Jewish people, and they actually demoted the Arabic language from being an official language into a language with a special status. But that status was not defined really in a way so that anybody could come and refer to the national bill as they did in this ruling, and base a ruling saying that Arabic is not a language and this is the Jewish state, and just use the basic law to to say no to any demand that has a flavor of nationality such as the Arabic language. Like in Carmiel, here in Nazareth Elit, or as recently changed the city, his name was changed to Nof HaGalil. We have a long struggle here for many years to establish an Arabic school in the city of Nof HaGalil, where at least, according to the Ministry of Education, there's about 40% of children in this city between the ages 5 and 19 that are Arab in the city. Okay, and the population of the Arabs in this city is about 30%. So far, we only have kindergartens, and starting from first grade through the 12th grade, we have to go and find solutions outside the city. With an ongoing refusal. So we have been in the court since 2013. The political struggle actually started way before, like at least 15 years before. We are actually awaiting the Supreme Court's ruling on our case. The reason, in my opinion, and many others who are in this struggle with me, that the municipality and actually the Ministry of Education refused our request to establish an Arab school is actually to protect and preserve the Jewish the Jewish status in the city, or the Jewish ethos. And so for them, we are only residents. We should not have any nationality rights. They don't want us to establish a community, because if you establish a school, that means you establish a community. My son will have other kids in his age living in the neighborhood, and then there will be relations between me and that child's parents, and then you will have actually a living community that grows and feels at home, more at home in the city, as opposed to just using it as like a hotel, because we all work outside, study outside, and then just come and sleep here. So there's no real community life here. So they don't want us to feel at home here. And recently they ran people started demonstrating in front of the city municipality. First they ask for a school, and then they will ask for a mosque. Presenting actually the fact that they don't want any symbol of Arab, the Arab culture, whether it is Muslim or Christian or the language, inside the city.
On social media, the conversation took a different turn. Raymond says Israel continues to steal Palestinian land on which to build illegal settlements, in the opinion of almost every nation on earth. When Israel shows its disregard for human rights and ignoring international law, it gets criticized. Citizen Jane says Israel invokes nation-state law in denying transport to Palestinian school children in Galilee. Damascus Frey said Netanyahu literally said, according to the basic nationality law we passed, Israel is the nation state of the Jewish people, and only it.
Thank you. many people say that we should forget about 48 and we should just start a new chapter. But what happened in 48, namely the ethnic cleansing of the Palestinian people, never stopped ever since 48. And therefore, we have to continue to remind ourselves that this ethnic cleansing and apartheid system is still around and nothing changed ever since 48. And Carmel is just an example for what we all know. I mean, those who are sensitive enough for human rights know that being Palestinian or an Israeli Arab in Israel means to be a second-class citizen. Being a Jew means to be a first-class citizen.
The court based its ruling on the so-called nation-state basic law. This law was passed in 2018 and caused public uproar against it, inside Israel and outside Israel, for its apartheid nature. On July 19, 2018, the Israeli Knesset voted 62-55 to approve the Jewish nation-state basic law that constitutionally enshrines Jewish supremacy and the identity of Israel as the nation-state of the Jewish people. This law, which has distinct apartheid characteristics, guarantees the ethnic religious character of Israel as exclusively Jewish and entrenches the privileges enjoyed by Jewish citizens, while simultaneously anchoring discrimination against the Israeli Arab minorities and legitimizing exclusion, racism, and systematic inequality. Carmiel was one of several cities and towns strategically established starting in the mid-1960s as part of an Israeli initiative to attempt to expand the Jewish presence in the Galilee, where Arabs made up most of the population. Carmiel is one of more than 700 communities the state has built for the Jewish population since Israel's founding, compared with none built for the Arab population. In March 1976, the Israeli military began confiscating and expanding several Jewish towns in the area. This was met by confrontations, including general strikes and street battles. This is known as Land Day and is commemorated every year in March.
These towns that were established in the Galilee, and starting in the 50s, 60s, and on, had a clear goal, which is to Judaize the Galilee, okay, which means establishing Jewish settlements there in the midst of the Arab towns to prevent Arabic continuous territory, okay? So the language of Arabic is, you know, part of, you know, it's part of, it's a national representation. It is, it represents the language, it represents the culture. So for them, it contradicts the goal, which is to have a Jewish-only settlement. Another aspect of this struggle is the refusal to accept that we have been here forever, okay, and that that these towns like Nof HaGalil, Carmiel, Afula were all established on confiscated Arab land. So like Palestinians living in Nazareth, in Kareni, in Ain Mahel, in Iksal, all these surrounding Arab towns, they had all, like, their lands were lost by the confiscation in order to establish the city, Nof HaGalil. So where, like, the official language of the municipality is that we are coming here to attain a quality of life, because there's no quality of life in neighboring cities. Well, this is obviously a sarcastic, you know, way of looking at things, because the city of Nazareth, which has double the population of Nof HaGalil, is sitting on only 14 square kilometers, whereas Nofa Galil, which is half, and all on confiscated land established in 1957, is residing on at least 33 square kilometers. So it's very normal that people living in high density will want to emigrate and move to a town which is offering more places to live in.
On social media, the conversation took a different turn. David says that Israel allocated 99.7% of public land in the occupied West Bank to Israeli settlers, illegal under international law. Only 0.24% went to the Palestinians. The nation-state law embedded apartheid. Have a look at it. The simple truth is that people had to be driven off their land. Noga says Netanyahu, the nation-state lawman who made Arabic not an official language and defined only Jewish communal rights in Israel, tells the Likud, "I believe in Jabotinsky's vision that every Israeli citizen should enjoy all rights. We appeal to Arab citizens, this time vote for us." Kieran says the nation-state law turns non-Jews in Israel into second-class citizens. In the occupied territories, Palestinians are under military law, while settlers are under Israeli civil law. Apartheid in action.
Well, this is what happens when you have the concept of a settler nation. A settler nation is a nation that basically invalidates the people of the land that they wish to settle. It's ethnic cleansing. The way that we can see this, that whatever the Israelis have done, or the Zionists really from the very earliest start, because my grandfather was a Zionist doctor who was kicked out of being the Zionist doctor of Palestine in Jerusalem in 1911 because he said, "Well, I'm a doctor, I take care of Arabs," and they said no, and they sent him away. And that's why he came to the United States. So the fact is that this is a country which has its basis in the deprivation of health, life, land to the people, and the Imperial was a beautiful place which had all kinds of gardens and parks, and it was beautiful before the Israelis took it over. But they did it as a cat's paw on the way, I think, to the northern part when they took, because it was established in 1964. In 1967 came the war where the Israelis captured Golan.
Although Arabs now constitute around 6% of Carmel's population, that is around 2,760 people, there is still no Arabic language school inside the city. As such, Arab Israeli parents are forced to send their children to various schools in the area. According to the education ministry, it doesn't take part in school organization, just the funding and content of what's being learned. It says that the money goes to municipalities and that they use it for transportation and schools. The ministry says the funding is sufficient. However, the municipalities say the funding is not. Many of them are accused of pocketing the money. This dilemma has been faced by the Arab population for decades now. It seems that Israel wants to further isolate the Arabs. At least, that is how they feel. Through decades of neglect and now political isolation, the conditions might be just getting worse. Here is the news making the press in Israel. The Jerusalem Post. For the first time since the inception of Israel, the Jewish population dropped below 74%, according to the Israeli Immigration Policy Center, IPC, who cited data from Israel's Central Bureau of Statistics. Also this year, the number of Jewish immigrants hit a record low of 33.8% of the total number of new immigrants, according to the IPC. The Times of Israel. Jewish extremists violently attack Arab car amid riots over settlers' death. Following overnight protests in occupied Jerusalem al-Quds over the death of 16-year-old Hilltop youth Ahuvia Sandak, who was killed in a car crash during a police chase after allegedly hurling stones at Palestinians last month, footage emerged of an extremist mob throwing rocks and other objects towards a vehicle driven by Arabs in the city, as well as attempting to open the car's door to attack the occupants. Ynet News. Prosecutors have released an amended indictment against Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, removing any mention of his family in a corruption charge in which he is accused of trading favors with a powerful media mogul. Netanyahu has been charged with fraud, breach of trust, and accepting bribes in three corruption cases. Haaretz. Anti-corruption demonstrations across Israel continue into their 28th week, with two teens arrested for alleged attack in northern Israel. Israel police detained anti-government protesters outside the prime minister's official residence in occupied Jerusalem al-Quds amid demonstrations across Israel, which have entered their 28th week. The remaining protesters, who numbered around 100, were removed from the street leading to Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's residence and relocated.
From me and the production team here at Inside Israel, it's goodbye for now.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mukhtar. a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge. We have been discussing about the qualities of the pious people based on the sermon number 184 in Nahjul Balagha, one of the very important sermons, one of the most important sermons that we have in this very powerful book of Imam Ali alayhi salam. And this particular sermon, many different qualities of the pious people have been mentioned. In fact, I would say it's a small, you can say a small encyclopedia where the different qualities have been mentioned, and it is our duty to come and develop and try to, you know, contemplate and open the doors of knowledge through these statements that he has mentioned. One of those statements, of course, is about contentment, where he says, "Tarahu qani'atan nafsu," that you will see that the pious person is one whose soul is content, whose heart is content. And previously we started the discussion of the contradiction, the seemingly contradictory terms that we have in the statements of the Sharia, that on the one hand we are told that we should be content with what God has decided, on the other hand we say that we have to work hard and struggle and have a long have some long term aims, have be firm. We have got these two types of statements, and how to understand and combine these two statements to have a clear understanding of what Islam wants.
You are listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Now, one of the answers that we gave last time was one, that when we talk about contentment and being pleased with what God has given you, we say that based on the abilities that God has given. That means you need to be content of the abilities that God has given you. God has given you the potential to become a very knowledgeable person, to go to a very good school, to study the right form of knowledge. Okay, that ability that God has given you, be content in that state. That means struggle nicely and work hard in that dimension and earn what you are supposed to earn based on the obligations of the Sharia. Don't seek beyond that. So for example, you are going to a very good school, you can afford a very good school. There is an even a better school, but in that school the environment is not good, it's not conducive. So be content with this level that God has given you. In other words, this is in general the first answer, and then you can compare other situations with this one and get a clearer picture. The second answer that we gave is that when you look at Islam, when you look at the akhlaqi and moral terms that are there in Islam, they are actually there to create that state of equilibrium in the society and in the heart of a person, that state of peace within the heart. of a person. If you look at Islam, the way the name Islam and all of that that I mentioned previously, salam, that we always mention while greeting each other, this is actually showing the soul of the whole of the Sharia and the akhlaqi teachings is to achieve this state of peace and lack of, and to remove those contradictions and those conflicts that exist within and in the society. This being the case, if you look at when a person has this state of greed in him, this state of greed is a state of conflict that exists inside the person. I will not go deep into this because this would need a whole different discussion. I just want to give you a key and then through that try to open other doors of discussion. Or for example, when people are greedy in the society, when everyone is not content in the society, it leads to conflict within that society. So this is actually the basic reason why contentment has been mentioned, to remove these contradictions and conflicts.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
Now, previously in the segment before this, right before the break, I said that Islam is that religion that wants to remove those conflicts and contradictions in that society. And therefore, contentment is one of those things that removes, that kind of tones down those states of conflicts. Like if everyone is greedy and everyone wants different, you know, amenities and wants to be as much as possible, get the best of everything, then there will be a lot of conflict. But now, if the state of contentment in fact increases the conflict, a person says that, look, you know, I don't want to, I don't want to earn, I want to be lazy. After all, God has said, be content, you know. These states not only will create internal conflict within him because he will not be able to materialize and actualize the potentials that he has inside him, rather, on the other hand, it will lead to destruction of the Muslim society, because the Muslim society will become weak. The Muslim society will not have progress. The Muslim society will not be able to benefit from the material potentials that God has put inside and within the essence of mankind. And therefore, there will be no true progress. Even with the when the imams, I mean, if you look at the way the technology was, they would update and upgrade the Muslim society to the technological advancements that different societies had. They encouraged learning and understanding different tools. So, we therefore, and why do they do that? That is because if this is done, then that state of equilibrium will maintain and will remain in the society and in the soul. So, the second answer to this question is that the salam and Islam that we're talking about is to be the one that encompasses the existence of the society, and these wrong forms of contentment will actually contradict and destroy the state of true peace and you know, equilibrium in the society and in the soul. Let us pray to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that He helps us achieve this state of equilibrium within and outside in the society. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome, on the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio.
قال النبي محمد من كنت مولاه هذا علي سيد فاز من ولاه هو بالكتاب مسدد والنور معناه باب العلوم ومرشد هو آيات الله من ناداه أو لبه حين دعاه نال هناه هو في الشدائد منجد والفضل يمنى هو في المحاسن أحمد والوحي ربا.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.